Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Corey Patton here. This is now a yearly tradition. The draft is right around the corner. We've got a special extra draft podcast and YouTube video here because we want to talk about, as every year we use the Permana Shift AI tool to help us kind of pull together insights in the draft, things that are happening that would be, I can write some SQL, but it's a lot easier for me to not have to write every line of SQL. We use the tool using our databases and all to find out, like, what are some trends that are going on? We do this with Corey every year. We've been doing this. I don't even want to admit how long we're doing. I know that Jared Jones was still in high school when we were starting to do this, and Jared Jones was very much flagged at the top of the draft point tool we were using. Yep. But now what we're going to do today that we hope you're going to find interesting is I promise you, I don't care how big of a draft nick you are, I say this as someone who really kind of thinks about the MLB draft an awful lot myself. And there are things that we came across in this that were eye-opening for me. So I feel pretty comfortable that they're going to be eye-opening to you as well. And Corey, kind of like, that's where you've been kind of using the tool. I've been using the tool, but you found a lot of things, a lot of trends, a lot of statistics and all of things where streaks of things that have happened that haven't happened in the draft. We will start with the disclaimer. Past performance does not indicate future results. We're not saying when we have this really cool Astro stat we're going to share, that doesn't tell you that there's 0% chance that they could draft, you know, a particular position going forward because they have their choice. But we're saying if you look at recent years, usually that gives you clues to how different teams think, to how different teams, whether it's their evaluation or their draft models, because a lot of teams use analytical models in this, how they weight things and all. So, Corey, great to see you. And we're just going to dive into this. You've been looking at a lot of this stuff. What is one of the things that just jumps out to you like, hey, I did not realize this until I started looking at this?
First of all, JJ, you are the draft guru. I'm going to drift off of you during this podcast. I might have the tool that helps find those things, but you're the draft guy for context. So I'm going to dive into some stuff that as you mentioned, our Permana Lab Shift AI tool has helped us ferret out instantly to show some context around all these streaks and droughts and team-based performance metrics and all that. And I'm going to show you kind of a lot of stuff today that maybe, no one would have seen coming in the first 100 picks. And as you mentioned, the first 100 picks are a lot of where the best value comes from. And so most of the coverage that we're going to talk about today is going to be from those first. And so when you break it down by teams and you break it down by levels and school levels and positions, there's some really interesting stuff to talk about. And I think we should start with a little bit of what teams do most often. And we'll do a little bit of streaks in the top 100 picks. Okay. And we'll do a little bit of position-based streaks in the top 100 picks. If you look at position players, what has been a more popular position player to be drafted in the MLB draft over the last, 10 years than shortstop? I mean, every year shortstops are up at the top of the draft. They're the most premium player on the field. They're usually some of the best athletes, right?
And they're versatile, where if you draft a shortstop, that could be your center fielder. It could be your third baseman. It could be your second baseman. It could be your right fielder, your left fielder. It could be your first baseman if you need to. If you draft a first baseman, he's not going to be your shortstop. If you draft a shortstop, he could be your first baseman.
Yeah, and you're only getting – so in those top 100 picks, you're only going to get a couple of bites at the apple, 3, 4 max maybe picks, and in some cases, who knows, not very many. And usually the premium players go off the board first. A team like that really shocked me when I saw this was, of course, shortstops are always in value, but the Rays have taken one for 8 consecutive drafts now. And that just goes to show you how valuable they are. And you know, I think it's a really interesting piece because once you start loading up your minor leagues, they just kept saying, this is the best athlete on the field. I'm going to keep taking him. And I think that's probably, to your point, why they have such a consistent streak of taking shortstops in the first 100 picks. Any context around that?
I think, as you said, like if you're saying we're just taking the best players, especially when you get to the high school level,
yeah,
there are very few exceptions. This year, Corona High has two middle infielders who could go in the first or in the first in the supplemental first round. Those situations are exceptionally rare. Generally, if you're taking a high school player, you're not taking a second baseman. You're not taking the third baseman. If he throws right-handed, again, if he throws lefty, then he's an outfielder. He's a, you know, probably. But if he throws right-handed, he's probably a shortstop because the best athlete on pretty much every high school team who throws right-handed plays shortstop. Again, unless you're at Corona and you have three guys who could go, who could all play shortstop, who could all go in the first round, those aren't the situations normally. And so I think that's the example of that. But then you told me that there's the flip side of this that was more surprising to me.
Well, as far as the
team that has not taken a shortstop in the top 100 picks.
Yeah, so I mean, in the first 100 picks, a team that has not taken a shortstop of any level, high school or college, the Rockies haven't taken a shortstop since 2018 with Taron Bobra, which is just hard for me to believe, to be honest with you. Because I mean, that position, you would feel like you would have your bite at the apple each year, and so not taking one since 2018 is pretty long. But it's not nearly as long as some of the other position players, which, I mean, go look at first baseman. The Tigers haven't taken a first baseman since Rico Bronya in 1988 in the first 100 picks. And there's a caveat. Spencer Torkelson was listed as a third baseman when he was drafted.
They announced him. The caveat. They announced him as a third baseman. Right. We are not saying what they play in the majors. We are saying at the time that they were drafted. To take the extreme example, if we're talking about Trevor Hoffman, we would be talking about a shortstop, not a right-handed reliever, because at the time he was drafted, he was a position player. The fact that down the road he moved is not what we're talking about. We're talking about for the draft and where they were drafted as.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, even to that, at second basemen aren't usually taken in the first 100 picks. Sometimes they are. But, I mean, the White Sox haven't taken a second baseman since 1985. I mean,
That makes some sense.
Yeah, I know. But you just feel like over the course of the last, you know, 40 years, you'd get closer to having somebody just take one that was on the board that made a lot of sense. But, I mean, and you know, let's go to the pitching side. Astros, I want to segue into that. They haven't taken a left-handed pitcher of any level since Brady Aiken first overall in 2014. And I know the
top 100 picks, no lefty in the top 100 picks since 2014.
No.
That leads to a stat that I pulled together, and I'll kind of work some in here on this, that I pulled together, you know, when we were doing this, which is looking big picture on this, but also trying to like, I narrowed like, okay, you were looking at top 100 picks. I'm looking at the totality of drafts, right? Mm-hmm. But I've also tried to narrow it down. I'm looking at 2020 to 2025. So I'm looking at more recent trends where I would say, you know, again, it doesn't mean that they're guaranteed to keep doing it this way, but it does mean that this is the way they've operated. And one of the things that stands out with this, oops, I got the wrong one there. Let me go to this one. So this is lefties and righties. 2020 to 2024. So last five drafts, drafted and signed for each org. And this is all 30 orgs, obviously. And you see that Astros right there, what you just said, Corey. Mm-hmm. Very small percentage of pitchers that they have drafted. That red right there, that's the lefties. There's only, I would say, one other organization. The Mariners is the other organization that fits with that too. Those two organizations very much draft right-handed pitchers, much more than lefties. I think with the Astros, if you look at them, you talked about since Brady Aiken, maybe they got a little bit gun-shy after that. But I would say more than that, if you look at their major league roster construction, I would say with that, we've seen them. They have, I'm not saying they've never had any lefties in rotation or the pen, but they've had years where they went into the postseason. Like usually you think that your teams want to have one, two lefty relievers for matchups. They've very much, it seemed like over the years, viewed it as if we have quality right-handers who can get lefties out, that's better for us, especially in the new rules where you have to face three batters. They have de-emphasized, it feels like, lefties. Now, if you compare that, there are some teams here, you know, like if you look at the D-backs there, if you look at the Giants there, and if you look at the White Sox and the Royals, they, you know, they take more lefties. Because again, you can see from this a little bit of an average there. And I wanted to add one other kind of along these lines. Okay, so we've looked at pitchers. I find this one, to be honest, even more fascinating. If we look at hitters, this is over the last five drafts. And we say, you bat right-handed, you bat left-handed, or you're a switch hitter. Look at the Guardians.
Yeah.
That red is, okay, I should have, bad graphic design by me. Red was right-hander on the last one. Red is left-hander on this one. Bad graphic design, I apologize. But the Guardians do not draft right-handed hitters. The lefties are the red, the yellow is the switch hitters. Less than 25% of the draft and assigned position players that the Guardians have drafted in the last five drafts bat right-handed, which is stunning when you consider, as we just talked about, if you play second base, if you play shortstop, if you play third base, you have to throw right-handed.
Yeah.
So you can be a switch hitter, you can bat left, throw right. They can, you know, those are things you can do, but they're the outlier of all outliers. And by the way, but there's the flip side outlier here too, which is if you look at the Twins, over 75% of the hitters the Twins have drafted over that time are right-handed hitters.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting. The Guardians, they have the longest draft of not taking a third baseman in the first 100 picks of any club out there going back to 2006. So there you go.
So that fits with it as well. So, yeah. Like, again, these are some of the trends that we're talking about where you can see things with it. Like, I'll be interested to see, but my suspicion would be if you pay attention to the Guardians draft during this draft, you're not going to see them take a whole lot of right-handed hitters. And we say that, like, I saw something in that about which Josh Norris on our staff noticed. Like, he was at a Guardians game, minor league game, and Josh shoots from open sides of hitters. And he realized, he's like, I'm never wandering over to the first base side with this Guardians team. I'm always on the third base side shooting lefties. Why is that? And then we started looking at it and realized, oh, they clearly have had an organizational philosophy that the platoon advantage, because obviously left-handed hitters are going to face way more right-handed pitchers than they're going to face left-handed pitchers. The platoon advantage to them is very advantageous, is something very important to them. The Twins, on the other hand, are looking at it and saying, we do not mind taking right-handed hitters who are then going to have to face right-handed pitchers because there are a lot more right-handed pitchers than, but by the way, so if the Twins face the Astros in a game, at the obsession in the minor leagues, you're going to see a whole lot of right-handed pitchers throwing to a whole lot of right-handed hitters.
AJ, we're in Vegas right now, and I have not had a lot of time to eat during the day.
No.
What could we do?
I would love a Huel right now. Vanilla Huel would go down perfectly because I don't have to skip meals because I'm too busy doing what you do in Vegas, which is not eat. I need a quick replacement, and Huel is the perfect thing.
I'm a chocolate guy myself. It's got the chocolate milkshake vibes to it. If you miss a meal, Huel can be your answer. If you're looking for a big protein boost, Huel can be your answer. So go check it out. Our friends at Huel are part of today's sponsorship. They've got you covered, spelled H-U-E-L. That black edition is a complete meal to feel full, focused, and ready for your day. Little prep, basically no prep. Shake it, open it. Huel has sold over 500 million meals around the world, and now it's your turn to try it. So go to Huel.com/foul and get Huel today with the exclusive offer for the FT fam of 15% off for new customers. If you use the code, you know it, F-O-U-L, minimum $75 purchase. Get after it.
For sure.
So that's one of mine, but what is another one of yours that you've come across?
Well, I think we also have to look at what has become kind of apparent in the levels, the school levels, high school versus college. And you have some good graphics about that over the last 5 years or so. And I can even go back even further on all this stuff about the top 100 picks, most consecutive times taking a player of that level. I mean, The Rays have taken a high school player within the first 100 picks in 23 straight drafts.
Wow.
That's pretty big, including the COVID year when college players were the primary drafted, level of player during that COVID 2020 draft as well. 23 straight drafts, the Padres 19 straight, Pirates 16 straight, and then it drops off from there. So I think it's interesting to look at the overall lack of high school players being drafted in the draft was apparent last year. We did a lot of story coverage about that. They're just not as drafted as they were years and years ago, and there's been a downward trend there. But it's kind of interesting that some teams just say we still find a lot of value drafting out of high school and developing further. So, and there's, you have a slide, I think you'll probably
talk about. I put the wrong one up again, but I want to show you this. This pitcher's one, this, right? So this is over the last five drafts again, all total drafted and assigned pitchers. And this is showing you what demographics they're coming from.
Yeah.
4-year red, blue is high school, yellow is junior college and others. Others, the very small group. Kumar Rocker is an other because he wasn't on a college team or a junior college team. But okay. This one jumps out right here, like you said. The Rangers have now Kumar Rocker fits for them. That's one of these. But mainly it's they are more willing to take junior college pitchers than any other organization over the last 5 years and sign them. Whereas in comparison, the Marlins and the Mets have not drafted and signed any junior college pitchers over the last five drafts. Now, the flip side, high school. Okay. The Red Sox and Cardinals, I will note, this is one trend when I say past performance does not indicate future results. During this time, Heim Bloom was the Red Sox, decision maker for much of these years. Now Heim Bloom is in St. Louis, but St. Louis already also very rarely, the Astros also very rarely draft and sign high school pitchers. If you see very little blue there, that is an organization. Nationals, by the way, this is another interesting one. We've talked about the Nationals, which obviously the Nationals just fired their GM. It could be a change of a decision-making, but we've talked about with them, could they take Seth Fernandez, become the first high school right-hander ever to go 1-1? Well, the last 5 years would say probably not, considering that they have been one of the teams that takes the fewest number of high school pitchers and signs them. Like this, again, these are trends. It doesn't mean it's a guarantee, but it is notable here when you see teams like on the flip side, the Brewers, who are really one of the best teams at developing pitching, but the Brewers, over 25% of the pitchers that they've drafted and signed over the last 5 years are high school pitchers. That is them and the Padres are the only two above 25%, and the Brewers have the highest percentage, which again, these are the kind of things that we know they are trends. Now, again, doesn't mean that they will always follow that without any deviation, but it does mean that these are kind of probably core tenets that these teams have where it's like, maybe we'll take a high school pitcher, but he's going to have to, for some of these teams, it's like he's got to be really beyond everyone else on our board.
Yeah.
For other teams, it's like, no, we don't mind the risk. We believe that we can develop those players.
Kind of interesting. But I mean, if you go back to my droughts here a second ago, we talked about in left-handed pitchers, high school. We talked about high school lefties. The Athletics haven't taken one since 1979 in the first 100 picks, the high school left-handed pitcher. And the Mariners since 2006. I mean, those are two, high school lefties, not in the first 100 picks. That's just not a game they play. Even right-handed pitchers, the Giants, last right-handed pitcher in the top 100 was 2011 with Kyle Crick, and the Cubs in 2012 with Paul Blackburn. So those are two clubs that say, okay, we're not gonna pick the high school pitchers in the early draft round, and maybe they later in the rounds for sure. But they just stay away from those from that level. But from the on the flip side, the college pitchers, the 4-year college pitchers,
which is a very popular demographic in the draft.
Very, but I mean, some more than others, right? So if you look again, I love the consecutive streaks because those that even bridge the COVID year are special, interesting, right? And the White Sox have drafted a 4-year college pitcher in the first 100 picks, 42 straight drafts. Not even close.
Wow. Number two.
Cardinals, 22 is second. And then you go down to 18, 17, 14. It's remarkable. To trip and fall into a college 4-year pitcher for 42 straight drafts in the first 100 is a remarkable consistency for the White Sox.
That is pretty remarkable. I have something I want to add in a minute on this that kind of fits with this as well. I'm working it up. But that leads me to one other that I wanted to talk about, which is when we talk about these demographics, right? Some teams view draft age. And when I say draft age, right, your age at draft day, very important. And others, I would say, view it as a factor, but not nearly as important. To give an example of this, Eli Willits, who reclassified this year, He was supposed to be a junior this year. Now he's a senior, draft eligible, is expected to go in the top 10 picks. We have kind of heard rumblings that maybe he fits at the Cardinals at pick 5. Well, if you look at the median age of drafted high school players in the last 5 drafts, the Cardinals' median age of their drafted high school players is the youngest by far, I would say, significantly younger than other organizations. They are one of the teams, and I will also just put up here for a second to show, they're also the fourth youngest when it comes to four-year college players. So what we can say from that is, again, things can always change, but the Cardinals have very much viewed a younger player as being more advantageous than an older player at a similar level. Now, the flip side of this, you look at the Tigers, Yankees, and Mets, they have looked at it and said, the Mets, Brett Beatty was a famous example of this, where Brett Beatty was one of the older high school players in that draft class. The Mets are fine with that. The Royals are pretty high up here. I bring that up because it doesn't mean that you can't succeed drafting older high school players. Bobby Witt Jr. was one of the older high school players in his class, and that's worked out about as well as the Royals could have possibly hoped on that. Again, bringing up this college one, we do see some changes here, right? Like the Yankees were among the oldest high school players, but then they're among the youngest college. Now, the college players, I'm still working on, maybe I could figure out a way to filter out some of the noise on this, in that for the college players, if you are all in on a couple of players team and then do a lot of senior signs, your senior signs who save you money that allows you to sign our players are going to bump up your age, right? So that would be another thing here. But I would say that you could say that the Angels, Padres, Mariners, and White Sox have some guys like Tim Elko, some senior sign success stories have reached the majors. They are teams that are willing to kind of say, hey, age is less of a factor we're putting all of our different weights on how we weight and decide who we want.
And that dovetails into what I was talking about a minute ago. And I want to clarify, White Sox have drafted 42 straight drafts with a college player, not a college pitcher. And I want to make sure I get that.
And this
right.
is top 100 picks again, though.
Yeah, I might have misspoke, but yeah, it was 42 straight drafts of college player overall of any position. So it does gel with what you just showed about them having the oldest average draft class. So they do like to prey up on the college four-year players. But if you look at even positions, I think there's some interesting position things, not even just the top 100, but just overall. I mean, when you look at certain things, certain teams that really like to draft for just position, even overall, and we'll come back to the top 100, third baseman. The Mariners, with a remarkable 43 consecutive drafts back to 1982, taking a third baseman in their draft. And the second closest to the Marlins, Pirates, and Athletics at only 4 years have they taken consecutive years. So 43 straight years taking a third baseman in your draft class is pretty interesting. I think that's something to note when you look at what you want to fill your organization with, for sure.
I wanted to bring up another one myself, which is this. Okay, speaking of what we talked about earlier, this is very simple.
Whenever we need to hire someone at Baseball America, we know who we need. Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Why do we use Indeed at Baseball America? Because it gets our position in front of qualified candidates. And it also allows us to do everything we need to make a hire, all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In this minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by doing so, you're supporting our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on our podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing, and that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
We don't, like, there is not something where you are required to draft in your 20 rounds a full team. Clearly, you can't. You can't draft a full MLB team or a minor league team. But some teams look at it and say, we're going to go really pitcher heavy in the draft. Some teams say much more, we're going to go hitter heavy. I find this fascinating. The Guardians, 70% of all draft picks the Guardians have made in the last 5 drafts are pitchers. 70%. Now, when someone says, well, how can you do that? How do you? And the answer is really what your philosophy there is our hitters, a lot of our hitters are going to come from your international, amateur, signings. And then your pitchers are going to come from the draft. And it's not shocking. I know that's not shocking to you, Corey, as being part of us working on this a couple of years ago to see the Angels number 2 on there.
Every pick.
You would probably guess the Angels 1, I'm guessing, after that draft from a few years ago, right?
Yeah. And the Yankees
Angels had a draft for the just drafted pitchers.
Just pitchers. It's incredible.
Drafted pitchers.
Yeah.
But here's what I find fascinating on the other hand. Look at the Astros here. The Astros spend 44.6% of draft picks are pitchers. In a league where the median is well above 50%, right? The median is 58%. When I say median, you could work out the average, but median basically is the midpoint is 58%. The team that drafts 58% pitchers is the norm. Draft 44.6%. Now, when you say, okay, why do they do that? You just said, for one, they don't draft left-handers, especially high. So we've worked out that stat. But also on top of that, what I would also say is the Astros over the last 5 years have very much looked at and said, we have an excellent pitching development program. But especially if you think about their rotation, you think about Framber Valdez, you think about Ronel Blanco, you think about Christian Javier, you could just keep going. Their ability to develop often low-cost, older international pitching signees who then develop into starters or relievers at the big league level has allowed them to kind of shift their focus in the draft to more hitters. And one thing I will also say with that, if everyone else is saying that, okay, almost 6 out of every 10 players taken are pitchers, and you're saying 6 out of every 10 almost that we take will be hitters, you might get a chance to have a little bit better. If you're confident in your ability to identify hitters, you're zigging where everyone else is zagging. So I do find that to be, again, another one of these very interesting trends that we are seeing that using the shift tool to pull us together.
Absolutely. And when you look at pitching, why they're taking those in the first 100 picks, and then you look at the actual outcome, the performance at the major league level, statistically over the history, if you look at pitchers all time through the first 100 picks, high school pitchers drafted in the first 100 picks have had one MLB, at least one Major League Baseball game started 56% of the time. Four-year college players, 58% of the time, and JUCO pitchers, 46% of the time. So it's still not much more over a 50-50 shot of a pitcher drafted in the first 100 picks is going to even get one start. And it goes precipitously down when you say, 100 strikeouts goes down to 45% each, basically. And then, it's just from there it goes down further. But you're not taking a pitcher early on with much more than a 50-50 chance, to be honest.
One of the things that jumps out to me as looking at this year over year, right now, we just did our update where we updated our top 30 prospect list, right? Yeah. And there are good organizations, well-run organizations. I would say that right now, the Tigers, it's hard to say, the Tigers are an extremely well-run organization. They have revitalized their big league club, their best record in baseball much of the year this year. They are a slam dunk, World Series contender this year. Their farm system's really good, all that, right? They also are a reminder. Like, if you look in recent years for them, the number of pitchers that they have drafted in the top 100 picks who have less than 20 innings, 30 innings in the minors right now because of injuries, it's a pretty significant number. Owen Hall, Ethan Schleifman, I can think of like four, Michael Massey. There's a number of them. You look at there are pitchers like the Guardians, again, really good pitching development. Justin Campbell, they drafted Justin Campbell in 2022. Premium pick, like out of Oklahoma State. He hasn't thrown a pitch in the minors yet. It's 2025. He has spent the entirety of the 22, 23, 24, and 25 season sideline. When you talk about pitchers, and by the way, I will cite, like, we can talk about the risk factors of high school pitchers, but a lot of those guys I just mentioned, Justin Campbell was a college pitcher. Michael Massey was a college pitcher. You can also, with the Guardians, point out Daniel Espino, who, if you would rewind the clock to about that time that Justin Campbell was on the mound at Oklahoma State, Daniel Espino was looking like the best pitching prospect in the minors, and he hasn't pitched since then, right? He's had multiple years. There is a risk factor. But when you talk about that number of, it's a coin flip, basically, 50-50, I think a lot of that is the attrition rate of injury well before you ever get to the majors. And then there's also the attrition rate once you get to the majors. But it's always been challenging, and it never gets easier because, we do know the reason that Jacob Mizorowski is so dominant right now is because he throws harder than anyone ever has as a starter, basically, other than maybe Hunter Green, maybe Nolan Ryan. And then you say, okay, does that up his risk of injury? Yes, because the harder you throw, the more. For any pitcher, the harder you throw, the more, like if I throw 95 and then I start throwing 100, I'm putting more stress on my elbow. But at the same time, the reason he's great is because it's the circle here where it's like, I throw harder, therefore I'm better, therefore I increase the risk, but I'm also throwing harder, which means I'm better. You could tell Jacob Mizorowski, hey, why don't you just throw 95? And the answer would be, because I want to be really good, not someone who's okay.
Yeah,
the challenge of this.
Yeah, to your point there. I mean, the reason you'll have success is because you push yourself at a premium level as a premium athlete. Okay. And you know, fair to Midland athletes are not premium players. You know, so you want to push yourself to get there. On the flip side, though, if you want to go to the other side about hitters, I think there's some interesting stats there to be garnered about in the top 100, how they perform as well. And I went back with the shift tool and did a little bit of analysis, taking two distinct time periods in baseball. And I went back from the first Major League Baseball draft in 1965 up to the year 2000. And then I did it from 2000 to 2017. And by then, okay, most players drafted in 2017 will have had a chance to at least show whether they can have one Major League Baseball game played. Okay. And so from 65 to 2000, 69% of the first 100 picks, hitters had 100 picks overall that were hitters, had one or more career MLB games played. 69%, almost 70% from 65 to 2000. From 2000 to 2017, only 46% of the first 100 picks that were hitters had one or more career MLB games played. You got any context there, JJ?
I don't. Like, I've been thinking about this and trying to have a theory, purely theory, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, because the thing that stands out about this is I would expect the number, like, if you ask me right now, at the top of the draft, is the success level of high school hitters higher now than it was 30 years ago? I would say yes. Like, and it would make sense because it's easier to evaluate players when you see players more often. And it's easier to evaluate players if you see players more often in comparison, you know, facing other similar talent players, right? The challenge of, I always use this example, but Byron Buxton.
I talked to
Twin Scouts about this the year or two after he was drafted. And I said, what is the best pitcher that Byron Buxton faced in his senior year of high school? That's high school senior season. I said, there was one guy who probably could have signed with the JUCO, who was 86, 87 miles an hour. And everyone else was worse than that, right? So you were trying, in that spring, you were trying to evaluate Byron Buxton. Mm-hmm. And you were doing so where he was facing pitchers who, by pro standards, were throwing batting practice, right? And so you're trying to evaluate that. But if you said, well, why were they able to be confident about it? Well, we now have the showcase circuit where you had seen Byron Buxton the summer before that, facing 95 plus on a pretty regular basis. That did not exist in 1975 or 85. Yeah. So I don't, like, that's a fascinating number to me. And again, maybe the thing I don't, you know, again, like, I would even say there are more players who come up and come down for the majors. So, like, when we say, like, just clearing that bar slightly.
Yeah. And then I can take it a little further. Okay. So 100 career hits, 100 career hits, just 100 career MLB hits during those same breakdowns from 65 to 2000, 61% of the first 100 picks that were hitters, you know, had 100 or more career MLB hits. And then in 2000 to 2017, only 41% of the first 100 picks had 100 or more career hits. And again, maybe some of them were slow starters from 2017 class, but still 100 hits, you know.
I mean, there's no draftee. There's basically no draftee from a decade of those that we're talking about who's not at 100 hits now and is going to get to 100 hits.
That's really the reality of the whole thing. And I don't know. It's really these are why we do this. This is why I look at this data so much with shift. So I just, you want to figure out what is that trend? Why is that occurring? And what's the underlying data? Now, to that end, I think I did a little bit of evaluation on certain teams that seem to just pick certain types of positional players and do the best with it. I found some really cool anomalies here. When I went back and I looked at all time, okay, in the first 100 picks, and I looked by position choice and team, which team selects position choices and has the most success? And it's really wild because a lot of this is some of these are old and it's not recent, but just interesting what jumped out was Angels first baseman. Like, they draft first baseman. They have taken eight of them of any age, of any class, of any school type in the first 100 picks overall. And those eight have averaged over 1,000 games played in MLB, a 269 average, 904 hits. I mean, guys like Wally Joyner, and, you know, Bruce Bochy, Jim Spencer, Eduardo Perez, Casey Kochman, CJ Cron. I mean, they seem to find first baseman. Cron was 2011. The other guys were
Cron, yeah, Cron's 2011. So that's the odd. That's,
I mean, but you still think in the history, if you've only had done it eight times and you got a 6 out of 8 strike rate of, you know, over 1,000 games, which, or close to it. It's pretty good.
And again, you have to be convicted, as we just talked about earlier. You have to be convicted to take that position high, and they were convicted, and it worked out really well for them over and over.
Yeah, over and over again. And even like the Brewers shortstops all time, they've taken 25 of them, which, you know, that's a position people take a lot in the first 100 picks. And I mean, that group has averaged 541 major league games each with a 277 batting average and over 500 hits apiece. I mean, you're talking Robin Yount and Paul Molitor and Gary Sheffield and J.J. Hardy and, you know, Gorman Thomas and Bill Spires and Dave Zvim and like Bruce Turing recently. I mean, it's interesting when you look at players, and I know it's hard to compare old versus new, but it, when you see draft averages like that, it's kind of fun to go back and group and say who does best identifying talent at that position that early in the draft.
It is fascinating. And so, again, the thing that stands out with this, and this is something, what we're talking about here, we're kind of reverse engineering what teams are doing. Like in some ways, I don't want to make it sound like we're doing exactly what they're doing. We're not. This is not something where we've built our own draft model. But what we're trying to do here is identify things that are being like that are standing out in different teams' models, right? Again, and when we say models, I would say at this point, I should say at least almost every team has, when you say a model, like what you're using a model to do for a draft for an MLB team is to take all these variables, all these inputs, right? Because you have all these scouting looks, for instance, and they have scouting grades and they have likelihood of reaching this ceiling, likelihood of this role, things like that. Then you have all this analytical data, like here's their average EV, here's their 90 percentile exit velocity, here's their swing and miss rate on fastballs in the zone, here's their chase rate on sliders out of the zone, all these things for all these players, right? And then, by the way, you have biomechanical information now in a lot of cases where it's like, this pitcher's delivery is like this. This hitter's swing is like this. Maybe you have force plate data where you say this hitter generates this many newtons of force while swinging with torque and all these things, right? And what I mean is you could literally, and by the way, you have the sports science and the medical side where it's like this pitcher we feel like has an increased risk of an elbow injury, but this pitcher has a below average risk, and they may not put a 52% or a 48%, but they put them in buckets and all. So you have all these different things that you are trying. Every team is out there is trying to draft the best players they can, right? And then you have also the asking price. And then you have, okay, if we spend X number on this, but then we can get this player. But what about if we draft this player? We spend X minus 500,000 here on this player. That player just as good, and that will allow us to get a better player later. The model idea, the idea of a model is to try to synthesize all those things, put different weights on different things, often by looking in the past at success that has been generated in the past. This is kind of a tech and baseball podcast a little bit as well, I guess. But, and then, which the tricky part of that is, you are looking at a lagging indicator because you cannot know who drafted well in 2017, like Corey just said, until about 2025, 2024. And by the time you do that and you say, hey, we need to adjust the weights in our model to reflect what we've learned from 17, but we're in a very different world in 2025, and we won't know if the weights that we changed in our model in 2025, we won't fully know if that was the proper changes to those until we can look back on the model in 2032. You see where this gets complicated. And again, what we're trying to do here is just, we're just trying to basically look through and mine for the little nuggets of information there that teams leave behind, the little hints.
Yeah. And a lot of it is probably esoteric, you know, nuggets that I think are very fascinating for me. And they may not have a true reason behind them, but they just get kind of, you look at them, you say it's hard to believe those types of things. But what we're doing here is also trying to inform or talk to the folks out there watching the draft starting on Sunday night. That'll say, okay, here's what you probably won't see them take. You probably won't see the Braves take a college third baseman because they haven't since 1978 in the first 100 picks when Bob Horner went off the board one. So you probably won't see that, is my guess. Those are things that we want to say. You very well probably won't see the Astros take a left-handed pitcher right off the board in the first 100, but you don't know. Maybe they will this year. I mean, the thing about
baseball, if they do, we will absolutely let you know, because they'll be like, hey, for the first time since Brady Aiken, the Astros have done this.
I mean, the Angels will probably not take a college outfielder because they haven't done it since Darren Erstad in 95 in the first 100 picks. So, I mean, it's just, you'll see these nuggets, which are really interesting.
So, and again, I want to, you know, in this pod to explain this a little further. We mentioned the Shift AI tool, and I just want to, you know, this is not an ad, you know, like we actually pay to use the Shift AI tool. This is not something where I'm getting paid to say this, but what it allows me to do is yesterday I had this idea, and it's just type in, like I can just type in what is, you know, when is the last time that, you know, a team that this team, pick whatever 30 teams, has drafted a, you know, first baseman in the top, you know, 100 picks, or the streak, or I can say, give me the average age of every draft. You know, like all these things, I can do them now without having to, again, I'm not saying I'm not capable of doing some of it, but I don't have to sit there and go, okay, should that be a left join? Okay, wait, did I constrain that properly? Oh, I didn't include this in the aggregate function, so I got to include it in the group by statement. And thankfully for most of you, you don't even want to know what that means right there. Don't even try.
Well, that's why we have Shift AI, so that you can just type natural language and then it comes back with the answer. And then JJ and I can go and do a podcast like this with a bunch of crazy nuggets. And that's what it allows us technical folks to get this done.
And what it'll allow us to do, what we will do on draft night is, you know, for instance, if, you know, the Cardinals take Eli Willits in the, you know, in the first round, for instance, or Jamie Arnold in the first round, for instance, with the Cardinals, because I'm just thinking Cardinals right now for whatever. We can then say, well, when is the last time that the Cardinals took a left-hander in the first round? By the way, I will give you a little nugget on this that did not come from Shift. This just came from, I'd recorded a podcast with Derek Gould from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch earlier today, and it reminded me of something that I did not remember, which is, okay, the Cardinals won the lottery, basically. They picked fifth this year. They picked seventh last year, drafted J.J. Weatherholt. If you want to know, when you say, okay, well, when's the last time the Cardinals had back-to-back top 10 picks in the draft? The answer is never. This is the first time that they've ever. So whatever the Cardinals take this year, we can say, you know, if they took a shortstop this year, they say the Cardinals have taken shortstops, you know, in the top 10 picks back-to-back years for the first time ever. Yes, that is true. It would also be true if they took a pitcher, if they took a catcher, whatever it is, because they haven't had two top 10 picks, which, again, like that, this is one of the things I'll give, you know, the little bit of kind of the, we've been talking more about top 100 picks, top 30 picks like that, because, and poor Corey's had to kind of deal with this too. The draft nomenclature of what a draft pick is called keeps changing. Yeah. So this year we have the first round. Then we'll have a PPI pick, a prospect performance incentive pick for Bobby Witt Jr. for the Royals. Then we will have competitive balance round A, which will be revenue sharing receiving teams who get extra picks. Oh, by the way, and then we'll have first round picks again, because you have teams like the Dodgers and the Mets and all who move down 10 spots because they signed a free agent over a certain amount and they are over the luxury tax threshold and all that. Now, so if you said, what is the first round this year? You could say the top 28 picks. You could say the top 29 picks. You could say the top 40 picks. Or you could say the really weird one, well, it's the top 28 picks or 27 picks. And then you've got to skip some, and then it's there at pick 38, 39, and 40, which doesn't make any sense. So that's why we're going to bore for going forward, like Corey did here, refer to it as top 100 picks, top 50 picks, top 30 picks, because the pick number remains the same, even if what round it is may change from year to year.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. I got to go update the model right now on that stuff. But it does make you kind of lose your mind sometimes. But we'll be doing this Sunday night with you. You'll see a lot of our Permana Labs. Go to our Permana Labs Twitter page. You'll see us produce a bunch of stats.
And we'll be retweeting a lot of those at BA too.
America will retweet. I'm going to retweet a bunch of stuff that JJ does as well. We'll be working together in conjunction to get out nuggets and facts about every single pick as they happen and continuing it on the next rounds Monday and Tuesday as well, just to keep everybody out there informed with these interesting little nuggets. JJ, before we leave, quick thing. When's the last time the Pirates had a sixth overall pick? Any thoughts? You know, do who they took?
It does not hit off the top of my head. If you said only one, two, or three, I'd have an easier answer.
Only happened once. They had the sixth pick, and they took Barry Bonds. So Let's see if you can strike again.
Okay. I'm gonna go on a big ledge here. Okay.
Yep.
Whoever the Pirates pick at number six, it will not be their best number six pick ever.
It will not be Barry Bonds. Let's be honest there, for sure. Awesome.
I feel very comfortable when you say past performance does not indicate future results. In this case, I will say the past performance is so good that you will not match it with future results, because there will probably not be any player drafted this year who will be better than Barry Bonds was.
And that's why you're the draft guru, JJ.
Yeah, awesome. that's those are the bold proclamations that you came to this podcast and this video to see. Corey, again, this is always fun. We will keep doing this, but we will take it offline as we keep finding nuggets, and we will share them with you all. By the way, if you enjoy this, I will also have a story putting together some of these over going up over at baseballamerica.com before the draft, but this video probably and podcast will probably beat that out, because I'm still, you know, it'll get out first because I'm still trying to put together more of these. They are, again, I could probably do 50 things that you did not know or, you know, may not know, because there are, it's a lot of fun stuff here. Yep. But with that, for Corey, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.